Yeah. Okay, I hope that, yes, it looks like this is the beginning. It's an honor to speak at Neely. I've been doing this for a number of years, and every time I want to remember to begin my discussion with what a powerfully important message is sent to all the community. And now I think we live in an age now where, shall we say, the 50% of Jewish brain power, which for so long lay dormant, at least in a communal sense, is now very much activated. And some people claim it's more than 50%, and I couldn't argue with that, especially with my wife. Today, we're going to begin we're going to have a discussion on the third chapter of Pirkei Avot. The third chapter of Pirkei Avot has some very, very profound mishnayot in them. We're going to examine two of them today, beginning with A on your source sheet. Now, you know, Pirkei Avot itself is a product of the Mishnayot of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, which Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was the leader of the Jewish people in the second century. We attribute the writing of the Mishnah to approximately 179, 180 CE, which would be about 100 years, 110 years after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And the Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was probably the only person who had the stature to be able to take a Jewish tradition, which for centuries had the oral law being oral, not being written down in any formal sense. We know that he had notes, and we know over the course of generations that students would take notes of their Rebbe's class and what they said, but it wasn't in any organized form, and it wasn't in any, shall we say, formalized form where there is a something written down. And it was then Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, realizing that due to the Roman occupation and due to the Roman oppression of the Jewish people, would either write down the Mishnah or then the Mishnayot, which he called the Mishnayot, the oral law, in a systematic way, or it, God forbid, could be lost forever. And he utilized the pasuk Eit la'asot la'Hashem heferu torotecha. The time is now. Now is the time to act, because the Torah itself is in jeopardy of being lost. A part of this is of this Torah Shebaal Peh is the Mishnayot of Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot is found and placed in the section of Nezikin. It's found after the Masechta of Sanhedrin, in which laws of courts, procedure, judicial procedure are mentioned, and therefore a significant part of the first part of this work is actually directed toward judges. What's the proper procedure for the witnesses? What is the proper procedure for their respective attorneys? What is the proper procedure for you as a judge? But then as we move into the first and second prakim, one of the most interesting aspects of Pirkei Avot is much of it is written in the second person. Much of it, in Perek Aleph, Perek Bet. There are aphorisms which are given, short, very concise, but very powerful statements that are made, Al Tifrosh Menat Zibor, do not separate yourself from the community, and very various other statements which are directed, it seems, to the individuals themselves. Your house should be open wide to the poor. How should your house be? And so, therefore, in this sense, Pirkei Avot departs somewhat from the standard legalized and legal language which is used in the rest of Shas. Now, today we're going to examine the third chapter of Pirkei Avot, but only two Mishnayot. Interestingly, these two Mishnayot are really separate and distinct from each other. They are not, these Mishnayot are not next to each other. However, we're going to see that they have a great deal in common. Maybe I'll give you a couple of these. They have a great deal in common. Let's look at the first Mishnah, listed under A. Akavya ben Mahalalel. Now, first of all, Akavya ben Mahalalel was among the most respected of all the Tanaim, those people who are either authored Mishnayot or they are mentioned specifically in Mishnayot. He was most admired for his integrity, his intellectual integrity. That once he took a position, that position didn't change. Could be everybody else on the everybody else was on the other side. He did not vary his position. And here he takes a very stern position. Akavya ben Mahalalel Omer, Histakel b'shalosha dvarim. Ponder three things, ve'ein ata ba'al lidei aveira. Everybody would love to have a formula by which we could live a life bereft of sin. And he says, I've got the formula for it, if you're willing to do it. One, da me'ayin bata. Know, or be aware, always be aware from whence you have come. The second is, ula'an ata holech. And where you go, ultimately, ulefimi velifnei ata ati litein din v'cheshbon. All right, that should be with, yeah, it's spelled properly. And before anyone who, you must know, you are going to give an accounting to God. If you remember that on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, a moment, every moment, you're never going to do anything wrong. And so, he then elaborates, Me'ayin bata, where have you come? Mitipas rucha, from a putrid drop. All, the origin of every human being is from a small, what appears to be putrid drop, but of course, nevertheless, once that fertilization process takes place, it is sublime. That's where human beings come from. That, of course, is the debate that goes on concerning abortion, concerning when is life life, okay, which we're not going to get into today. We'll have people far greater, far, far greater halachic minds than mine can deal with that. But the idea that you have to realize what your origin is. Don't be so proud and so arrogant that you think you can do and you know all. Ulana tolech, and what is your end? Lemakom afar, rima v'tolea. To dust and to worms and to maggots, that's your fate. Very unpleasant thought for all of us. But again, Akavya ben Mahalalel really was known for saying it as it was. He didn't sugarcoat anything. Before whom do you give this accounting? The King of Kings, the sublime King of Kings, God Himself. So, of course, it would appear that if indeed we could ponder this at every moment, probably would never do wrong. But this goes along with the general idea that everybody here in this room knows intellectually we're going to die. I once heard, I believe it was Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, that life is one long walk to the cemetery. Well, there's another man who told it as he understood it. Right? I mean, but is he right? Of course he's right. But for us to live a life based upon being one long walk to the cemetery deprives us of the joy of being human. But nevertheless, Akavya ben Mahalalel says, if you really want to avoid it, to some great degree, you must always have this in mind, awareness of who you are, where you are destined to go. And interestingly, this particular statement seems to go unchallenged until we get to Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yud Dalet. Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yud Dalet, which in our sheet is B. Who, Rabbi Akiva. Now notice, first of all, I put Rabbi Akiva in brackets because Rabbi Akiva was the author of the prior Mishnah, which was stated. Some people, among them Abravanel and others, seek very strongly to connect all of the Mishnayot. They say there is a reason why C follows B and B follows A, and D will then follow them, based upon the careful structuring of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. But in this case, we find, notice the name Rabbi Akiva and Akavia, very, very closely related. Now, normally I would say that's just my Mishigas, but Abravanel actually raises it too, and he says that there is not mystically, he was not necessarily a mystic, but he said one should take note of this, that he addressed himself to a person who bears the virtually the exact same letters in his word, only they sound alike, they're just not exactly alike, but he takes a completely different stance. Hu haya omer, chaviv adam shenivra b'tzelem. Man is beloved because he is created in God's image. Now the word, we could translate she b'tzelem, that because he is created in God's image, or in that he is created in God's image. And then continues Rabbi Akiva, Chiba yetera no da'at lo. An enhanced form of love is in that no da'at lo, that he knows it. Okay, shenivra b'tzelem, that he is created in the image of God. Shenemar b'tzelem Elokim asa et ha'adam. Okay, and then he continues, and he next step, chaviv in Yisrael shenikru banim lamakom. The Jewish people as a whole is beloved in that they're called banim lamakom. Now I omitted the proof pasuk just in the interest of time and space, but it can easily be seen in the Mishnah itself. Chiba yetera no da'at lem shenikru banim lamakom shene'amar. In other words, it is even greater that they are known because it says banim atem la'Hashem Elokeichem. You are children to your God. And then he goes. Then he continues, Chaviv in Yisrael, a step further, the Jewish people is further beloved, Shenitan lahem kli chemda. They were given a precious instrument. Chiba yetera, it's even greater than that, no doubt, Len, that they know they have the instrument. Kli chemda, shebo nivra haolam, this instrument was used to create the world, Shenemar, ki lekach tov natati lachem, I have given you. Now, lekach it could mean either a wonderful lesson. That's what lekach is. But torati al tazovu. Here he means to say that in fact, this with ki tov, God created the world of tov through the Torah itself. That's why it says lekach tov, that God created the world by the usage of tov. Torati al tazovu. Do not abandon my Torah. Now, it's interesting. That's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. We can see here, of course, a very great contrast in the tenor of the Mishnah. The tenor of the Mishnah for Akavia ben Mahalalel is a darkness. There is a darkness, a brooding darkness that we need to be able to maintain in order to live a life which is meaningful and without sin. Now, some of you, maybe all of you, are familiar that the Musar movement, and I always point out, Musar does not mean chastisement. Musar does not mean to only criticism. Musar is self-discipline. That's what Musar is. So when people say don't give me Musar, they're right. What it has turned into, like many. Shall we say, valuable aspects of our lives, they can be misused. So if people see the self-discipline that they should be imposing upon themselves as having to inflict it upon others, that's a misuse of Musar. But the Musar movement is a movement of self-discipline. It is a sociological movement, but it's a system by which I can learn to live the best life that I can, which means to say that I am capable of living up to my fullest potential. That's what it is. To be able to take the gifts that God has given you and then to use them. Okay. That's Musar. Now, the founder of the Musar movement as we know it today was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He, in the early 1800s, was a brilliant educator, perhaps the most brilliant mind of his age, too. There are many, many brilliant minds. His may have been, certainly he was in the top 1%, whatever it is. Not that I can be judging those minds. I always point out, you know, when people talk about who's the Godel Hador, who's the Godel Hador. Okay, so I tell them, look, you ever go down to downtown Chicago, and if I'm standing here and I look up and I see the Sears, now the Willis Tower, I don't know what they're doing after that bankruptcy ends, but you look at the Willis Tower, and then you look at the Sears Tower, I have no idea which one is taller from where I'm standing. There might be an objective taller, but I won't know that, right? All I know is both buildings are way taller than I. That's what I say about Gedolim. What? Yeah, what did I say? Yeah, what did I say?
Willis.
Oh, John Hancock and Willis, right. Sorry. Okay, John Hancock, right. But I have no idea which is taller. But I know they're both taller than I, way taller than I. And that's the same thing with Gedolim Yisrael. When we get into these meaningless debates about who's the Godel Hador, the people who are doing the assessment have no idea who the Godel Hador could be. As I say, standing where we are. But certainly he was an extraordinary mind. And he taught many students. He was an educator par excellence. And the two movements that came out from the Musar movement, one was Narvadic. The Narvadic movement said, man is too lowly. We are so low, sin, even sin is above us. That's how low I am. And if I can break down this arrogance that I have as a human being, completely deconstruct myself, I'm not going to do anything wrong. That's self-discipline. The other student, there were many students of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the other was the famous Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the Alter of Slobodka, took the opposite view. He said, man is too great to sin. It's beneath you to do wrong. Two opposite views. And one has to believe that each of these views can be supported by each of these two Mishnayot. All right? The Yosef Yosel Horovitz, who was the founder of Narvodik, he probably took his inspiration from this first Mishnah. Always remember who you are, which is really nothing. Compared to God, compared to the rest of the universe, your creator, know your place. And Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel says, yeah, that's right, know your place. You were created, B'Tselem Elokim. You were created in the image of God. And wrongdoing is beneath you. And if you can do that, then of course you found the secret to a meaningful life. That's these two Mishnayot. Now, if you look at C, Rashi mentions to us, when we come to the Mishnah Chaviv HaAdam, Shenivra B'Tselem, he comments on Rabbi Akiva's dictum. Beloved is man in that he was created B'Tselem. Lakach mutal alav lasot ritzon kono. If you were created in the image of God, act like it. Then you have to you must do what you can to act in accordance with the will of God. See, one of the dangers, of course, of Rabbi Akiva, his view, Chavel Mishenivra B'Tselem, is we all have a tendency to use that which is great within the Jewish people to indicate that this somehow makes me greater than I really am. Chaviv Adam Mishenivra B'Tselem. Right, and better yet, Chaviv in Yisrael, the Jews are beloved because they're called God's children. And I'm one of them, and therefore I'm better than others. The issue is not whether you're better than others. The issue is, am I as good as I possibly can be? Am I taking the gifts that God has given me, and am I using those gifts, whether it's intelligence, or whether it is beauty, or whether it is a personality, whether it is wealth, those various, all of those are gifts that can be used to influence other people and oneself to do that which is good. And so that's the issue. Now, because of that, I want you to turn, please, to E. We're going to skip D for the moment. Please look to E1. Abravanel, Don Yitzchak Abravanel, lived in the 15th century. He died in 1538. He lived throughout. He, as you know, was a victim of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. He, along with his comrades, he was an absolutely prolific writer. He put it this way: you never say to yourself, "I have 10 minutes. I think I'll see what Abravanel says about this." All right, because that will never work. They also say, you know, Abravanel used the way his parish on Chumash was that he would set 15 or 20 questions down, and then he would proceed to answer all of them. Sometimes the answers, you know, they had a common answer. Other times they didn't have a common answer. But one of the things we would always say is never start learning Abravanel before you go to sleep, because you'll fall asleep with the questions, and you won't get the answers. But he was a brilliant thinker, and a person, as many Sephardic great people were, he had a wealth of knowledge in many, many areas. Many areas. Whereas the Ashkenazim stood more to only Jewish sources for their inspiration, the Sephardim branched out. Now, I'm going to just read, you can see I've underlined the salient points of E1 in Hebrew, but let's just go through them in English. And by the way, please feel free to interject, ask, disagree, agree, whatever you'd like. Okay? The manner in which Akiva ben Mahalalel offered a path to avoidance of sins is by concentrating on the insignificance of the physical and of the lowliness of the act in which he is conceived. Okay. Next time you think you're something special, just remember where you came from, and just remember what your end will be. That'll keep you in line. Okay. Now, notice now what Abravanel did. He caught the idea that you have two Mishnayot separated by 12 other Mishnayot, but nevertheless he felt Akiva and Akavya all put together. He said these two are connected. Rabbi Akiva countered that the focus should not be on man's degraded physical state and his lowly conception. Rather, the focus should be upon three other aspects of his life, that through them he may become cognizant of his sublime status and his elevated position. He should focus upon the richness of his soul, having been created in the image of God. Now, that's a very appealing statement, of course. Now, it may be appealing, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily more efficient. It doesn't mean it's necessarily going to work better than a Kavya ben Mahalalel statement. But Abravanel does seem to feel that he does seem to side in a very long essay that he writes. He does seem to side with Rabbi Akiva's view of the world and how we're to see ourselves. So, but he says these are two different worldviews. Now I'd like you to look at E2. Rabbeinu Ovadia Sforno, also around the same time, a little earlier than Abravanel, I believe. But he writes on... Now, first of all, before we go to Rabbeinu Ovadia, it would appear from Abravanel that we have quite a lot to be proud of. Right? I have a neshama. And not only do I have a neshama, says Abravanel, which I did not include on, you know, this long essay, not only do I have a neshama, right, that, but nevertheless, I am part of a people that is called God's children. Mm-hmm. How magnificent is that? And a step, by the way, it's not necessarily to the exclusion of others, but as being God's children, but we have a special status, as we will see more enhanced in the next piece. And not only that, Akavya ben Mahalalel, you are worried that that man will become arrogant? I'm telling you, don't be worried that man can become arrogant. Rejoice. You are B'Tselem Elokim. You live in the image of God. So you need to rejoice. Number two, Akavya ben Mahalalel said what? That look where you came from. And Rabbi Akiva says, that's right. Look where you came from. You came from Avraham Avinu, from Sarim, from Yitzchak, from Yaakov, from Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Ruth, All of the great people, remember where you came from. Not to abuse that which we have, which is so precious. And finally, Akavya ben Mahalalel says to us in Mishnah number one, he says, you're never going to get out of this mess. Once you die, you're accountable for every second. How are you ever going to be able to endure divine judgment? Think about it. So Rabbi Akiva, that great optimistic mind, said, yeah, I'm thinking about it. And I know that I have a means by which I can avoid divine retribution. Klichemda, I have a Torah. And that Torah was used to create the world. If I live by that Torah, I will live in accordance with the cadence and the rhythm of the world. So Akavya, you need not, you are instilling fear in people that need not be. Because we have our essence, which is we are Tzelem Elokim. We have our origin, which should not be seen only for its material being, but who our neshama comes from. From the greatest of people and the greatest, not of minds, but the greatest of souls. And finally, you're worried about accountability? You've got it. You have it right here. It's a cliffhanger. So he counters Akavya ben Mahalalel. Questions until here? Mm-hmm. All right. Yes?
Can't the two simply be, well, not simply, but be reconciled by knowing that we are from humble origins, but we've been endowed with potential?
Yep.
And the task of our lives is to live up to the potential.
Absolutely. I agree. They are not mutually exclusive. They are not mutually exclusive. They only become problematic when we obsess on one or the other. If I only see myself as Tzelem Elokim, this is I am greater than this, and I that, I maybe have a bigger piece of the Tzelem Elokim that you might have, then that problem comes about. And so the antidote to a person who is arrogant might be Akavya ben Mahalalel. But what about the person? And this is Narvodik, right? And Narvodik says, Thek, you're nothing, you're nobody. But what happens if a person feels that he's such a nobody that he's worthless? Worthless in life. So then we turn to Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says, you're not worthless. Nobody's worthless. You know, you could like Jesse Jackson, I like Jesse Jackson, but he said some magnificent things in the 1980s. He told young African Americans, I am somebody. That's very important. Everybody feels, I am somebody. And if you feel oppressed and low and that you have no value and no dignity, then somewhere, somehow, you have to feel, I am somebody. That's what Rabbi Akiva said. You have to know, you are somebody. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the word Tzelem. You may have heard me talk about Tzelem in the past. The word Tzelem, we say, is the image of God. Notice the word Tzelem has the word Tzel in it. Tzel. What is a tail?
Shadow.
What is the shadow? What does a shadow do?
Follows you.
It follows me. That's one thing, right? Gives you the willies sometimes. Yeah. Yes, it follows you. What else? It tells me. If I'm walking along and I see my shadow, perhaps, and then I see another human shadow, but I don't see the person, I know that person is there even if I don't see that person. That's what a shadow does. That's Tzelem Elokim. When I look at you, or you look at me, we don't see God, but we know that God is here. That's what it means to be a Tzelem Elokim. I am, quote, this, and from that we get the word matzle, matz, etc. All of those become images of some sort or another. That's what it means to be a Tzelem Elokim. I am a tzel. I am, and you are every human being on this planet. By the way, Rabbi Akiva says, Chaviv Adam. Doesn't say Chaviv Yisrael. He makes a clear distinction when he wants to draw the distinction. All human beings are precious because they carry the shadow of God within them. And how dare we ever humiliate, degrade another person simply because they are different than we are? Question, yeah.
I heard from Matt Levinson of Mary Crown. He said Hashem Tzilchah, that Hashem is always our shadow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the other way, yeah. Yeah, they're right there, shall we say, quote, mirror images of the same concept. But we are B'Tzelem Elokim in that we are a shadow when I see another human being. And if I do that, as we're going to see in just a moment, got to move quickly, then I'll never degrade another person. How could you? Right? Now, that's Rabbi Akiva. Now, let's see what Rabbi Avadya does. This sounds really good. I mean, I like the Rabbi Akiva's position. But watch how Rabbeinu Avadya looks at the position of Rabbi Akiva with a twist. So far, Rabbi Akiva appears to be saying to us, listen, everything's going your way. Okay? Know who you are. That's terrific. Watch what Rabbeinu Avadya says. Rabbeinu Avadya Sforno. Along with being created in the image of God comes the admonition to protect and preserve that image. Right? You have an image. You have a specialness about you. Every human being does. You have to protect it. As it is written, your blood which belongs to your souls I will demand, for in the image of God did he make man. So therefore, you may never harm another person without justification. That can happen, of course. This admonition to all humanity is even more binding upon Israel. So he says, this is seen as stages. According to the Sforno, Rabbi Akiva's statement is carefully crafted into stages. All right, all of humanity, okay, you're all in the image of God, act like it. Jews, you are called more binding upon Israel because they are called God's children. Now, so you'd say, oh, isn't that wonderful? That's really nice. And that, of course, leaves it open for a sense of superiority. He says, therefore, they're obligated in honoring their Father in heaven even more than others. What a wonderful way of looking at it. We all tend to look at the benefits to be derived from an idea, but we don't realize, or we choose not to realize, the liabilities of that. If you are a part of a nation that is called Banim Lamakom, children of God, then again, you children are chayev in kibud aveim. In this case, Avinu Shabashamayim. Furthermore, than the last three lines, those Jews who hold fast to the Torah are even more bound. You know, let's say people say, oh, listen, we believe in the Torah, etc., etc. And then when you think of sometimes how we act reprehensibly, in a manner which does not befit us, and we walk around as Orthodox Jews or Jews with a kippah or whatever it is that we do. So Sforno says, and this hasn't changed, he says, those people who hold fast to the Torah are even more bound by the obligation to preserve the Torah, the precious instrument used to create the world. As it states, forsake not my Torah. So he sees this sort of as a midway point between the stark contrast of the sternness of Akavya ben Mahalalel and the joyful optimism of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbeinu Sforno says, remember, with this is also comes all of the attendant obligations that come with being with status. And we know very well what happens when people have status, how often it can be abused and used in their favor. Now, one thing is that you notice Rabbi Akiva says there's an enhanced love because Rabbi Akiva says there's an enhanced love that they know it. A very important statement, I believe. But before I get to that statement, I just want to mention one more thing about Chaviv. I've mentioned this a number of times, though some of you may have heard me say this before, but I believe it's worth bearing. The term Chaviv, Chavivi, right? What does that mean? The precious one, beloved to me, okay? Okay, Motek, Chavivi, all of those things children hopefully are called all the time, all right? Even when they don't act proper. It's still Chaviv, right? Yeah, it's true, yeah, right? Okay, and by the way, when you hear a parent say Tzadikal, how could you do that? That's a wonderful thing. They're telling me you're a tzaddik in training. Every child is a tzaddik in training. Every one of us is a tzaddik in training. Right? That's how we have to see ourselves. It's how actually both Akavya ben Mahalalel and Rabbi Akiva say that we have perception. I have to see myself as a tzaddik in training. Not there yet, but I have to see myself. I have to see myself as a Talmud Chacham, or see myself as the best teacher, or best parent, or best husband that I can be. Not in the world, that I can be. We're not in competition. 7 billion people on the planet, 7 billion plants. Right? So I'm not in competition with anybody. So the thing is, what does Chaviv mean? It comes from the same concept as Chov. If a person is beloved,
then they have obligations toward themselves and toward the person who loves them. You know, the younger people here don't remember, but there was a book called Love Story put out when we were 20, 29 years old. It was all just beautiful. Now, by the way, I'm not saying it was a terrible story, but one line in there should be burned. Right? Love means never having to say I'm sorry. What a stupid statement. It's the dumbest statement I think that, first of all, it's worse than dumb. It's destructive. Love means I am obligated to say I'm sorry. Love means if I love you and I hurt you, I have to say I'm sorry. And that even if I don't have to say those words, I have to act in a way in which it's clear to the person who loves me and whom I love that I value you. I feel awful that I did this to you. So that's an important rule. When you say chaviv ha'adam, human beings are beloved, that's really what Rabbeinu Avakia Sforno is saying. That you have obligations. That if chaviv ha'adam, the precious man, remember there's a chov in that. With being great, with greatness in any area, comes responsibility. And too often we want to expect it, we want to accept the rest of the greatness and the adulation, but we're not willing to accept the responsibility that must come with it. And that is Sforno's position. It does not conflict with either of the other positions, but it gives us a dimension which I think is very helpful to us. Now, that's Chaviv Ha'adam. The interesting thing is when Rabbi Akiva says Chiba Yetera three times, it's even greater that they know, greater that we know, greater that we know who we are. I quote here a Gemara in Shabbos, and this is on D. All right. The Gemara says when a person gives a present to another person, he has to let him know he gave the present. Doesn't mean there's no such thing as anonymous presents. Sometimes they're okay. But the Gemara says it's really an obligation to let the person whom you care about know that you care about them. That's what the Gemara says. Hanotein matana l'chaverot tzarich l'hodio. You have to let them know. Shenemar l'adat ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. Hashem sanctified us and he told us. You're special. Again. Not special over everybody else. You're special because you are who you are. You are special. I gave you a gift. You are B'Tselem Elokim. You are a Ben Elokim. And because you are such, I want you to know that gift. Sadly, I think we probably all know people who are either intelligent or funny or beautiful, and they don't see themselves as intelligent. They don't see themselves as beautiful. They don't see themselves as an neshama, which is beautiful. Nothing can be more sad than a person who has a gift and is unaware of that gift. And so therefore, Rabbi Akiva, who perhaps had the greatest gift of all, aside from the intelligence that is unsurpassed in all these centuries, a wife who loved him so much that she was willing to live without him so that he could live to his potential. I'm not saying that's necessarily something we can all aspire to. I'm not, really not. All right? But on the other hand, she loved him so much that she, when he came back after 12 years of intense study and growth, and he heard his wife talking to a neighbor, and the neighbor said, some husband you got there, he's never around. She said, if he could live to his potential, and I could even live without him for another 12 years. Okay. I hope my wife doesn't say that about me, but the idea is, try it. No, but the idea is that she did. Her love was so deep. He understood what love was. Love has to do with responsibility, with caring, etc. And so therefore, he had a gift, and he knew the gift. Not only was his intelligence, but the person that he shared his life and his destiny with. That was the gift that God gave him. So his life was one big optimism. And it's throughout the Talmud. The optimistic statements right and left. Because he understood that everything, commando of the Rahman al-Kaaba, whatever God does is for the good. That's an optimistic statement. Not easy to make. Right now, I just wanted to point that out. And that's Rabbi Akiva who says that there is an added measure of love when you let somebody know you love them.
or when you let somebody know how wonderful they are. So that's an important lesson. That's an important lesson. Let people know what you think of them. We do that probably enough when we're not happy. But when we are happy, that's even way more important. Now, let's take a look at the third page. Again, I often quote this, the categorical imperative of Kant. I may have done it here, actually, in the past as well. Immanuel Kant was born, he was in the 18th century. Kant is one of those people who becomes the great divide. Like in the United States, you have the continental divide. When the water goes west, and in the Rockies somewhere, the continental divide is the water goes east. So in just about every discipline, there is a divide, usually by some great mind that made a breakthrough. So until this person, we thought this way. Now we made a major change. It doesn't matter whether, you know, whether it was Newton or whether it was Einstein. Now it's Einstein. Everybody measures physics according to Einstein. That doesn't mean they think Einstein is always right. But on the contrary, if they want to measure their theory, they say, let's see, can this show, and every scientist, every physicist would love to be able to show Einstein to be wrong in some area.
Sure.
Because that means that their understanding of physics is superb, even more than his, perhaps. All right, now Kant is the same thing. Kant is to philosophy probably what the Einstein is to modern physics. And that is people nowadays in Western philosophy, there's pre-Kantian philosophy and post-Kantian philosophy. That's pretty good. All right. So Kant tried to devise a system of morality, a way of thinking to determine whether the act that I'm doing is a moral one. Now, the first one I included, even though it's not directly, and our time is short, I have about three more minutes here, not necessarily for us, but the second axiom. Here's how he tells people to act. Act in such a way that you always treat humanity, whether in your own person or in the person of any other, never simply as a means, but always at the same time as an end. Every human being is an end in himself or herself. An end. If I go to the checkout counter and I take my groceries and put it there, for both of us, both I and the young man or young woman who is there, are treating the other person not as an end, but as a means to an end. She's got to make a living. I got to bring stuff home. So she's the way by my paying. She's the means by which I can get the food out, by my buying the food. That assures her of being needed. So we're both means to an end. She does whatever it is as a means. And all of us do that in some way. All of us do that, of course. Our whole life, we meet people for a moment, the bus driver, the shoe salesman, whatever it is that we do. And in that sense, they are acting as a means to an end, however temporary that end is, and not an end in itself. But Kant says, people can't be only means to an end to you. Because only people who are greedy and awful are that way. When you see another human being, you have to see them as an end in itself. And what does that mean? It means they have value independent of anything that they can give me. And sadly, when we live in a capitalistic society, not completely capitalist, but we live in a society, a free market, and this, and all of these things, what I ask, I'm going to give you an example, they're going to pull the plug on me in a minute, but I invested in stock once. Usually when I invest in stock, it usually has that cataclysmic effect on the rest of the economy, right? But I invested in a stock, for me, a fair amount of money, and it was a stock, the biotech stock, and these, you know, they take a long time, but it's a high-risk type of stock, because if they fail in the trials, the clinical trials, it's over. You're done. Your stock went from 20 to 3, okay, just like that, okay? Okay, so now it comes up, and all of a sudden, I look at my stock, got it on my app, got it down. Okay, I look at my stock, and I'm one of my two. Anyway, I look at my stock, and all of a sudden, it's up $2, $3, $4. And I am doing a jig. The kids thought I was nuts, but no. But the thing is, I am extraordinarily happy. I am so happy. And I went home, and I told my wife, look at that, the stock is up $3, and who knows what we're making, and who knows where it's going to end. And that night, before I went to bed, I realized how happy I was.
You know what they were working on? This trial would reduce tumors in the brain. Okay? That's wonderful. But that's not why I was happy. I was happy because I made money. What I should have truly been happy is, my God, there are thousands of people out there who did not have hope, who now have hope. That means that for me, all of those people were means to an end, not an end in itself. So, again, we all have human failures. I never mind mentioning my failings. First of all, it assures me that I've been talking for a long time. Right? But the point is that people became, for me, and it happens to all of us, means to an end. But they're ends in themselves. And finally, I'll conclude with a remarkable Maharal Prag. The Maharal, I'm just going to read it in English quickly. He says, thus we find the distinction between man and all other sublime angels and earthly beings. There's a different, we are different. Fast forward. Sublime beings exist in their most perfect state, meaning angels. They need do no act to fulfill their potential. They don't have to do anything. A malach is a malach is a malach. It doesn't change. All right? Similarly, earthly beings, with the exception of man, do not act to fulfill their potential. For example, a zebra is a zebra. All zebras will be born. They'll be able to run within 3 or 4 hours, maybe, after their birth. And they grow older, and that's it. All lions eat zebras. That's it. There are no good lions. There are no bad lions. Just lions. Just zebras. Right? All right? But, he says, but only man has the capacity to move from potential to potential realized. Only human beings, says the Maharal, have the ability to use this word, the ought. Not what do I do, but what ought I do. In all of God's creation, only human beings can ask that question. What ought I to do? Chaviv Adam Shenev Rabatzela. Beloved is each and every person in this room, and each and every person everywhere, because they were created in the image of God. Okay, everybody, good morning. Have a wonderful day. Okay, I'm looking to you.